Philippians chapter 4, we left off last week in verse 7. Let's pick up the story. Chapter 4, verse 8. Here we go. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. Paul is wrapping up his letter to the Philippians with examples of what, quote, stand firm in the Lord, end quote, chapter 4, verse 1, looks like in day-to-day life. He says, be of the same mind in 2. Rejoice in the Lord always in 4. Let your gentleness be evident to all in 5. Do not be anxious for what? Anything. Yes, last week. But in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And then he says, finally in 8. And in Greek, that word can be translated in addition to, or one last thing. And the one last thing is, quote, think about such things. Now, the word think in Greek, or the original language, is legizomai. Can you say legizomai? Well done. And it can be translated, think, ponder, dwell, reflect, muse, ruminate, imagine, daydream, focus on, chew on, mull over, or meditate. In fact, quite a few of your translations opt for meditate because Paul is a Jewish rabbi. And in spite of the fact that the word is Greek, the imagery is of Hebrew meditation. Think of Psalm 1, blessed is the man who meditates on the Torah or the law day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by rivers of living water, end quote. Now notice, Paul says, think about or meditate on such things. There's a chasmic gap between Eastern meditation and Hebrew meditation. Eastern meditation is about emptying your mind. But Hebrew meditation, on the other hand, is about filling your mind, meaning it's not just about getting the toxic thoughts out of your brain, but it's about also getting life-giving, healing thoughts into your mind. Paul is calling the Philippians, as well as you and me, to fill up our minds. Well, with what? Well, Paul lays out a laundry list of the kinds of things you and I should think about. Here's the plan. Let's work through the list one by one. Does that sound okay? Yeah. Three of you. Okay. Here we go. First off, Paul says, whatever is true. The word true in Greek is aletheis, and it means that which corresponds to reality. Which I think is interesting because Paul just left off harping about anxiety. Think back to chapter 4, verse 6. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in King Jesus. Anxiety is all about what is untrue. Am I right? It's all about the what ifs. It's all about hypotheticals. What if this happens? What if that happens? It's not about reality. It's about what may or may not become reality in time. That's why 90% of the things that you and I worry about never happen. Am I right? We toss, we turn, we think, we worry and fret and we bite fingernails, and 90% of the stuff never actually happens. Why? Because it's hypotheticals. It's not reality. Paul is saying, listen, you should think about what is true, about reality, not about all the hypotheticals and the what ifs and fear about the future and what if this happens, what if that happens, and my job and unemployment and bills and no, think about what is true. It's one of the many reasons that you should read the scriptures every single day, because when you open up your Bible and read, you read truth. You are filling your mind with, okay, yeah, that is the real true story of the world. Oh yeah, that is ultimate reality. Oh yeah, all that other stuff, no, that's not right think, Paul says, about what is true. Secondly, whatever is noble, or semnos in Greek. The word was used in the ancient world for behavior that was fitting for the nobility, noble, nobility, or the aristocracy or royalty. Think of a few months ago, Prince Harry in Las Vegas, right? The scandal, playing strip poker in his hotel room. Why was that a scandal? I mean, he's what? How old is Prince Harry? 20-ish? How old? All you single girls should know, right? He is available, right? What is he, 20, 21, 22? I don't know. Why is that a scandal? I mean, that's boys will be boys, right? Because he's royalty. He's not a frat boy from U of O, right? God bless you, ducks. He's royalty. And we expect him to act like royalty because he's nobility, right? It's funny because, you know, in a sense, the same is true of you and me. You are sons and daughters of the King of the universe. Or I think of that line in Ephesians, walk worthy of the calling you have received. Or put another way, live up to who you really are. Paul is calling you and me to act like nobility, but not only that, to think about what is noble or what is fitting for the nobility, not to think about what is ignoble or crass or trashy or degenerate. No, think about what is noble. I think of TV. The average American spends 5 to 7 hours a day in front of a TV. That's median. Average, 5 to 7 hours a day. Now, my house is crazy. We don't have a TV, and we don't have a video game system. I'm thinking about trading in the car for an Amish horse and buggy. It's kind of the logical next step, right? And it's because I don't have the self-control. I would fit right into the 5 to 7 hours a day category. I don't have enough self-control, and it's out of sight, out of mind. But 5 to 7 hours a day. Now, how much of what's on TV is noble? And how much is ignoble? How much of what's on TV and in film? And don't get me wrong, I love film. Absolutely beautiful. But how much of film is anything but noble? It's trashy. It's degenerate. It's a mark of depravity. It's ugly. It's nasty. It's not right. It's immature. It's in rebellion against God. And it's basic mathematics. If you're reading the scriptures for 10 minutes a day and you're watching 5 to 7 hours of TV a night, which one do you think is going to form how you think about the world? That's not a trick question. Right? A first grader could do the math on that one. 10 minutes in Jesus, 7 hours with CSI Miami. See, that shows how long it's been since I've had a TV. That's the last show I remember watching, right? It's probably 10 years old, you know? Whatever, I don't know. But is Survivor still on? It's always on, right? Whatever, 5 to 7 hours of Survivor, you know? I don't know. I mean, seriously, I mean, what is going to form your mind? Paul says, gosh, get all that junk out. Think about what is noble. The next one on the list is right, whatever is right, or quite a few translations opt for just, because the word in Greek is diakonos, and it can be translated righteousness or justice. Early on, the word was used for weights and measurements in a market, and what was right, what was just, was the right standard or the right unit of measurement, because it was as God intended. Right at the back of Philippians 4:8 is all sorts of Edenic imagery from the Garden of Eden. Before there was unrighteousness, before there was injustice, the world pristine and primal and beautiful, the world as God intended. Paul says, listen, that's what you should think about. Not all the things that are wrong in the world. The world is filled with injustice. Absolutely. But the world is also filled with what is right. Think about what is right. Now, it's a problem for me. I love the news. I love international news. I don't have a TV, but I do have an iPhone. And I actually love politics, in spite of the fact the system is broken, but I find it fascinating. And it's easy for me to get sucked into, you know, my CNN app 10 times a day and stay up late in bed right before I go to sleep reading editorials from, you know, the Wall Street Journal or whatever. And that's not all bad, right? Part of that's healthy, but the problem is the news media feeds off of what is wrong with the world. That's why I think of people that are obsessed with talk radio, who are all about Jim Stewart or Rush Limbaugh or whoever, are the exact same people who are almost always ready to fly off the handle at any given moment, who walk around angry, right? All you have to say is, I love this, is say, hey, Obama, bah! Or hey, Romney, rah! You know what I mean? It's like people ready to fly off the handle at a moment's notice. Why? Because all they think about is what's wrong with the world. And trust me, there's a bunch that's wrong with the world. But the news media is not an accurate representation of reality. It's business. It's profit. And it's easy to get sucked in and to start believing the lie and forget about what is right and what is just in the world. But the fact that Jesus is the king of the universe and his kingdom is spreading. I mean, case in point, there is less violence in the world today than ever before in world history. But yet so many people, in particular in the West, think the world is falling apart at the seams because we have more access to violence in the world than ever before because of the media. In reality, the world every single year is getting more and more and more in line with the kingdom of God as the rule and the reign of Jesus spreads all over the planet. But it's easy to get sucked in. Paul says, no, think about, there's a time and a place for all of that. We are here to fight injustice as followers of Jesus, but think about what is right or just. Next up on the list is pure. The word pure is hagnos in the original language, and it means not mixed or adulterated with any other substance or material. Pure as in pure bread, right? Your mind should be pure. It should be not mixed with sin. No lust, no fantasy, you married couples, men and women. No pornography, or on the other side of the spectrum, no anger and bitterness and unforgiveness replaying in your head what happened a year ago. How many of you do that? You replay a conversation, you replay an event, you replay a broken time in your life over and over from a year ago, from a decade ago, from 3 decades, over and over and over. No, get all of that junk out of your mind. Think about what is pure, what is not mixed with sin, that is free from all of that. Think, Paul says, about what is pure. Next one on the list, he says, lovely, whatever is lovely, or prosphiles in Greek. It can be translated beautiful or pleasing. You know that feeling you get when you see a beautiful human being, or a beautiful work of art, or I'm an architecture nerd, a beautiful building, or mountains, or the ocean. You know that feeling? That is lovely. You know that feeling you get when you taste good food or drink coffee, or you listen to good music, or you're with family and you're with friends, when you do what you love. Maybe it's you last night, I started a fire. Oh. You know that feeling when you're by a fire with a cup of tea and a good book? Or basketball, whatever is your thing, right? Whatever. I'm the nerd, okay? Whatever. You know that feeling? That's prosphiles. That's lovely, what is beautiful, what is pleasing in the world. Paul says, listen, think on what is lovely, on what floods your soul with emotions of joy and peace. Not on what is ugly and displeasing and floods your soul with anxiety and depression and fear and what if and sorrow. No, don't think of it. I mean, there's a time and a place, yes. We live in a broken world, but as a general rule, think about what is lovely. And he goes on, what is admirable. The word admirable is euphemos in Greek, and it can be translated of good report or well recommended. If somebody were to ask you, what are you thinking about right now? And you were to say, I'm thinking about dot, dot, dot. Could they say, oh, really? I hear that's great. I hear great things about that. Or would they say, really? You're thinking about that? Why? That's lousy. Is it any wonder you're anxious and depressed all the time? Right? Seriously. Is it admirable? Think, Paul says, about what is admirable. Two more. He goes on, he switches from adjectives to nouns, and he says, if anything, or if there is anything in the world that is excellent. Now, that word excellent is arete in Greek, and it was the word used by the ancient philosophers for virtue. In fact, a better translation is virtuous. To the ancient Greeks, virtue was excellence of character. It was life done well. And Paul puts that in, by the way, on purpose. Philippi, city right in the middle of Macedonia, right in the middle of Greek culture. He puts that in on purpose. More on that in a minute. He says, listen, think about what is virtuous. Well, the Greek philosophers have been saying for hundreds of years, what is excellence of character? Not about all the stuff that is, in today's language, ungodly, right, or upside down. No, think about what is excellent or virtuous. And then last on the list, he says, praiseworthy, or epenos in Greek. That word is self-explanatory. It's anything that is deserving of praise. What if I were to take your thought life, and there's a new Apple device that's able to put your thought life up on the screens? Not really, but that was, somebody said last hour, they're actually working on that, and it scared me to death. But what if I could, you know, with my iThought or whatever, put your thought life up on the screens for all to see? Could people watch your thought life play out and say, that's praiseworthy, let's worship? Oh my gosh, that is true. That is noble, that is right, that's praiseworthy. Let's worship God. Wow, what are you thinking about the future? Oh, wow, that's praiseworthy. Let's worship the creator of life. Is it praiseworthy? That's what your mind should be filled with, Paul says. Think about what is praiseworthy. Whatever is true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy. Next slide. Paul is calling the Philippians and you and me to look out on the world and to celebrate the goodness of God in all creation. One of the first things that scholars point out in the text is that in the laundry list of true, noble, right, there's nothing that is distinctively gospel. I mean, it could have been, not Philippians as a whole, which is all about the gospel and Jesus, but Philippians 4:8. There's nothing in the list that could not have been ripped right out of any ancient book on virtue by any of the ancient Greek philosophers, Aristotle, or later after that, Seneca, or Epicurus. Like, nothing. It's right. They would have loved that list. There's nothing that is distinctively Christian, per se. What does that mean? That means that Paul is calling you and me to celebrate the goodness of God in all of creation, not just in the church, wherever you find it, to look out on the world and see the fingerprints of God all over the place, in science and in medicine, in art and in architecture, in beauty and in fashion, in food and in drink, in love and romance and children and in family, to see the goodness of God in a baby's smile, in an old man's laugh, in the fresh light of a sunrise, in a warm cup of coffee. The world is teeming with the generosity of God, am I right? But it's easy to forget that. It's easy to walk through life oblivious to the goodness of God all around you. To walk through life blind and deaf to the screaming voice of the goodness of God in creation. Here's a quote from N.T. Wright in his commentary on Philippians, which a bunch of you have because it's for sale out in the annex. He says, the command in verse 8 to think about all the wonderful and lovely things listed here runs directly opposite to the habits of mind instilled by the modern media Read the newspapers. Their stock in trade is anything that is untrue, unholy, unjust, impure, ugly, of ill repute, vicious, and blameworthy. Is that a true representation of God's good and beautiful world? How are you going to celebrate the goodness of the Creator if you feed your mind only on the place in the world which humans have made ugly? How are you going to take steps to fill your mind instead with all the things that God has given us to be legitimately pleased with and to enjoy and celebrate? Because that's God's heart for you, to fill up your mind with all that is good in the world and to celebrate the generosity of God. But Reich sparks a question, and it's a valid, legitimate question. What about evil in the world? Right, we live in a world that is filled with what is untrue and what is ignoble and what is unjust. All that's right. What about evil in the world? Well, keep reading. Look down at your Bibles. 9, Paul goes on to say, whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice. How do you know what is good and what is evil, what you should think about and what you should not think about? Well, Paul says two things. First off, whatever you have learned from my teachings, which are now called Romans, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, right? My teachings, whatever you have learned from me and received from me. That word received is a technical term in the New Testament and in ancient Greek literature for authoritative tradition passed down from one generation to the next, what you and I call the scriptures or the Bible. He's saying, listen, in today's language, read the scriptures every single day. That's how you know what is good, what is evil, what to think about, what not to think about. I mean, you start whatever you have learned from me, my teachings, like fill your mind with the scriptures. And then secondly, he says, or heard from me or seen in me, meaning look at my life, right? I'm a living example of how to. How can Paul say that? Well, Paul is a follower of Jesus, right? In another spot, he says, follow me as I follow the King. Right? And Jesus, the King, is the filter for how you and I, he's the lens for how you and I view the world. Jesus and the gospel of Jesus is how we know what to critique as evil and what to celebrate as good. Because we have to do both, am I right? Most people pick one of the two. Some people's worldview is rooted in Genesis 1, hey, God created the heavens and the earth, and when he was done, he said, it is good, let's party. Others' worldview is rooted in Genesis 3. The world is sinful. Let's go to church. Right? And the reality is that both are true. Genesis 1 and Genesis 3 are the gospel. God created the world. He created food and drink and music and beauty and sexuality. And all of that was created by God. And at its core, it's good. It's a gift from God to the world, to you and me. But we screwed it up in the garden a long time ago. And because of sin, quite a lot of that has been corrupted and warped. And now it's evil, right? There is evil in the world. And Jesus and the gospel of Jesus is the filter to know how you and I know what to critique as evil and from the enemy and what to celebrate as good from God. And Paul is saying, listen, find the good in creation. We know all about the evil, right? I get push notifications on my iPhone about the evil from CNN. We know all, but find the goodness because it's actually all over the place. It's actually right and left. Find the goodness of God in creation and think about that. And then he goes on from there. And the last thing Paul says is, and if you do, the God of peace will be with you. Notice there's a connection between how you think and peace. Or put another way, there's a symbiotic relationship between your thinking and your feeling. That is true not only theologically from cover to cover in the scriptures, but scientifically. I mean, that is how kind of the human body is hardwired by God, right? What starts in your head, your brain, your thought life, your imagination, ends up in your heart, in your feeling, in your emotions and what you and I call the soul, right? If you think about what is true and noble and right and pure and lovely and on down the list, well, then the God of peace will be with you. But the bummer is the exact opposite is true as well. If you think about what is untrue, what is ignoble, I forget what's the third one. I'm tired. I've been sick for 2 weeks. Whatever the third one is, right? If you think about all that stuff, what is impure, what is ugly in the world, what is blameworthy, well, then you are going to be filled with anxiety and depression and fear and anger and doubt and darkness. Because your thinking and your feeling are interconnected. That's the way God made you. In my opinion, we don't talk enough about the mind in the church. There's so much talk about the heart. I'm all for that. But the life of the mind is central to the way of Jesus. In fact, Jesus said the greatest commandment in all of the Torah, or the scriptures of Jesus' day, was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your what?
Mind
and all your strength. You love God, yes, with your heart, with your soul, with what you and I call feeling, and with your mind, with thinking. You love God by learning. That's why I'm teaching right now, right? We love God by learning. We love God with a thought life, with a mind that is filled up with what is right, what is true, what is noble, what is beautiful in the world. That's how you love God. Your mind is either an act of worship to God or an act of rebellion against God. One or the other. Which one? What is your mind like? What is my mind like? Is it filled with good or filled with evil? Is it filled with what is true and noble and right and pure and lovely and admirable and excellent and praiseworthy? Or is it filled with all the other stuff? Is it filled with hope and optimism and faith and trust? Or is it filled with fear and negativity and pessimism and anxiety and the what ifs about the future? Is it filled with love or is it filled with bitterness and hate and rage? What's in your mind? There's a line in the Hebrew wisdom literature that says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. I think it was FDR who said, men are not prisoners of fate, but prisoners of their own minds. Oh, there's so much truth in that. Some of you are literally prisoners of your own minds. Now this weekend, to be honest, I'm speaking out of my weakness, not out of my strength. Gosh, I'm introverted by nature, which means I'm in my head all the time. And that's not always a great thing. The last 6 months, in particular last year, but last 6 months, anxiety has always been a weak spot in my life. And I was doing way better. And then in the last 6 months to a year, gosh, so much anxiety. And God's been speaking to me about kind of patterns in my thought life that are broken, that are not right. My mind is filled with so much junk. That is anything but true and noble and right and pure and lovely. So much fear, so much anxiety, so much doubt, so much second guessing, so much insecurity. It's all in there. Is it any wonder I'm anxious all the time? Is it any wonder? What, are you kidding me? Absolutely. There's a line that sticks out to me from Paul's letter to the church in Corinth. He writes, "For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does." And God spoke this over me years ago, and I keep coming back. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take every what? Thought. How many of them? Every thought captive to make it obedient to Christ. What a crazy idea. Paul says, listen, there are strongholds in your mind. That word strongholds in Greek was used for military castles or fortresses dug into the side of a mountain that were unbreachable and impenetrable. There are strongholds in your mind, in the way you think about the world, that are anything but true and noble and right. And Paul says we need to demolish strongholds. Now, what's fascinating to me is what Paul calls strongholds in the modern world, psychologists call neural pathways. Okay, your brain, I'm not much of a scientist at all, understatement of the year. But your brain, as you know, is made up of billions of neurons that are all interconnected. And when you repeat a thought or an action, you start to form neural pathways where your neurons are all connected together and your thoughts start to flow through electrical impulses, literally, start to flow through your brain at a rapid pace. And the more you repeat a thought, the more you repeat an action, the more the neural pathways form and end up set in stone, and you start to actually think what you and I call automatically, right? It's the way you think about the world, and it might be good or it might be evil. Right, you know people who are optimists, right? It's a neural pathway. The way they think about the world is with hope. And then there are people like me. That's not the way I think about the world, right? And it's crazy to me. I read, to prep for this week's end sermon, the last week I read 3 books on psychology, which is weird, but it's what you do, right? And it was fascinating to me. There's a whole new brand. One was by a neurologist, and it was all on a new idea called neuroplasticity. Which is crazy. It's the idea that your brain is plastic. It's not concrete. It's not set in stone. Psychologists used to think that, listen, by your late teens, by 20 or so, you are who you are, right? Think of the saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, right? Your brain, the way you think about the world, is set in stone. But that is now like scientifically proven to not be true. The idea of plasticity is that your brain can change. Your brain can actually grow. It's a muscle. It's an organ, right? It can actually literally grow, and it can change. And if you have neural pathways down one direction towards negativity or whatever, you can actually change the way your brain works. And then a couple other books I read were fascinating. They're on a new field of psychology called positive psychology, which is about 10 years old. And it started with a few guys at Harvard who said, listen, psychologists only study unhappy people. Only. Why don't we study happy people, right? And instead of just trying to make miserable people normal, why don't we start trying to make normal people happy, right? Not this true story. Nobody had ever done that before. Okay? 1998 was the first year a psychologist in Harvard started to study happiness. And for the last, whatever that is, 14 years, hundreds of studies have been done out of Harvard and Stanford and top universities all over the world, a brand new field of science, positive psychology, on the happiest people in the world. And what cracks me up is all the findings, right? Here's like the, I read one book by a dude out of Harvard. Here's the primary takeaway. That the American myth is, if I'm successful, then I'll be happy. And guess what? It's not true. Shocker of all shockers. That the happiest people, it's not about circumstances, it's about actually the brain. It's about how they think about the world. Here's my favorite, the Harvard guy. I'm reading his book, and he says, all about the brain, neuroplasticity, your brain can change, you have to rewire your brain to think, positivity, all that kind of stuff. And here's his 5 takeaways after hundreds of scientific studies on the happiest people in the world. Here are the 5 takeaways for how to rewire your brain to think better. First off, meditation or prayer. Are we fans of either? Yes. Hebrew meditation, not Eastern, but yes. Right? To meditate every single day, set aside time, take a deep breath, and think and pray to the living God. Secondly, gratitude. He says, write down 3 things a day that you're thankful for. I've been doing it for the last week. It's amazing, right? Every night before I go to bed, I have my journal right next to my bed, and in the back, I write down 3 things that I am thankful for. And it's crazy. He says, in 21 days, you rewire your brain. I'm almost there. 2 more weeks. Crazy. Wait for 2 weeks from now and be like, hi, everybody. Hi. 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 Good morning. Yes, I'm Joel Olstein. Okay. Right? Gratitude, all right? 3rd one on the list is conscious acts of kindness, right? Serve people, help people, bless people, share your money with those in need. Don't focus on yourself. Focus on those in need. Does that sound at all like Jesus to you? Journaling. He says, write down 1 positive experience a week, okay? Healthy relationships. And here's what I love. Every single thing on that list, followers of Jesus have been saying for thousands of years. Psychologists and researchers are just now waking up to what the authors of the scripture have been saying literally for thousands and thousands of years. I mean, there's nothing on that list that is not straight up the way of Jesus, right? In fact, all four of the five are in Philippians. Journaling doesn't make it into Philippians, but there's no Moleskine and, you know, Barnes & Noble in Philippians. But all the other four, I mean, it's right there. But the difference, and here's where you need to get me, the difference between self-help and the gospel of Jesus is that in self-help, the end is happiness. Right? That's the end. In the gospel, the end is Jesus. Paul says, think about what is right and true, noble and lovely and pure, all of that. But he does not say, and then you will be happy. Although that's true. But he says, and then the God of peace will be with you. To Paul, this is not a narcissistic self-help technique. It's truth, absolutely. But to Paul, this is about God. This is about Jesus. This is about the God of peace. And what we're just now waking up to is what God has been saying all along. How you think matters. What a man thinks, he becomes. That is flat out true. If your mind is filled with all that is wrong in the world, well, okay. But if your mind is filled with what is true, what is noble, then the God of peace will be with you. And that is my prayer for you in the coming weeks and months and years, because it's not going to happen in a weekend, right? You're not going to reprogram your brain in a sermon, right? But in the coming weeks and months and years, may you demolish the strongholds in your life, the strongholds in your thought life, the strongholds in how you think about the world, strongholds of grumbling and fear and cynicism and negativity, the brokenness of the world. May you relearn how to think as an act of worship to the living God. May you think about what is true and what is noble and what is right and what is pure and what is lovely and what is admirable and what is excellent and what is praiseworthy. And may the God of peace be with you.